hello, and welcome to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your host, Neil Horwitz. You can find me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well, where I also publish content. And visit the website, dsmsports.net, where you can get older episodes and more content. And of course, you can follow the podcast on all the good podcast platforms. Really good show for you guys today. I'm joined on the podcast by Kendall Baker. He is the sports editor for Axios and publishes their newsletter that reaches over 100,000 subscribers. We talk about his story, how he started this all out, got acquired by Axios with his newsletter, great insights into digestible sports content, creating content in the newsletter medium, and really just offers a lot of great insights and inspiration. So stick around for that chat with Kendall. But first, this episode's opening segment looks at a campaign that Bud Light has run now for multiple seasons across several sports, and that is their Bud Light Selly. Teams and properties are just doing a great job activating this campaign along with Bud Light. You'll see video of NHL celebrations and NFL celebrations in particular that use the hashtag Bud Light Selly. It's great content that fans really enjoy because they like seeing the celebrations, the dances, the choreography, and Bud Light can associate themselves with this high moment, this happy moment, this celebration moment across sports, across their properties, across their partnerships. And also you're seeing teams get even more creative. Something that I shared this past week, which really stuck out to me, is something that the Indianapolis Colts do of the NFL. They do a behind the celly feature piece where their players talk about those choreographed celebrations, kind of do a video X's and O's breakdown of the Bud Light Selly celebrations. Just a fantastic way to associate the brand with something that they want to be associated with, content that the team can be confident fans will enjoy and want, and just speaks to how teams can start to go about activating these partnerships through content, through something that feels organic to the experience, to the games that they're already watching, to the content they already want to consume. So, you know, take some inventory. What are all the high moments, the happy moments of your sport, of your game, of your week? You know, it's easier said than done, and we all know they exist. We all can easily name and list out some of those positive moments that happen every week or every game or most games or most weeks. But it's another thing to actually take inventory, something that you can provide to the corporate partnerships team so that when they are negotiating these deals, when they are building packages year to year or for renewals, they have all this in front of them and can find a good thing to associate with a partner. Sometimes a partner will come with an idea, and maybe that happened this time with Bud Light because it was across sports and it worked across sports. But it's important to equip the corporate partnerships team. I think it's definitely getting smarter and more savvy out there as digital and social are working alongside the corporate partnerships teams to build those integrated packages, to build content that will work. But it helps to also just take inventory and know what you have to fill and what those opportunities are that are out there so that, you know, you can always be on the mind of those sponsorship salesmen. So that's the episode's opening segment. Definitely think about it. Take a look at that hashtag Bud Light Selly. Just a great job of activating a campaign across properties, across sports, across platforms, and learn from it. But more importantly, stick around because I'm going to be joined next by Kendall Baker of Axios Sports. Thank you so much again, man. Like, if I do meet you in person ever, I owe you a coffee or a drink or lunch or something. It never, like, ceases to amaze me how generous people are.
Happy to do it.
All right, let's do it in 3, 2, 1. Back from this episode's opening segment, and I'm really psyched by today's guest. I feel like I know him personally because I hear from him every single day in my inbox. We are talking today on the podcast with Kendall Baker. He is a sports editor for Axios. Welcome to the podcast today, Kendall.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Really psyched to pick your brain. What you've done is really impressive and inspiring. Before we get to the meat of our discussion today, want to hear about your story, your career path. Tell us about, you know, working your way up in the sports journalism game and starting Sports Internet, making the move or shift to Axios, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Definitely. So I've had a pretty interesting, career path in many ways. So I started out right after school. I graduated from University of Pennsylvania in 2013, and my first job out of school was a writer at Bleacher Report. I was in there. There was a writing program for recent college grads to kind of graduate into, you know, being a feature columnist at Bleacher Report. And so I entered that program. It was a pretty interesting time at that company. It was X months after the Turner acquisition. So Bleacher Report was kind of, transitioning from a blog in many ways to a respected web presence. They're hiring, you know, established writers. So it was an interesting time to be there. That's mm-hmm. where I started. It was kind of cool to see some things happening there. And then after about a year, I left and went to ESPN, and I took a job there, kind of completely different from writing. I was working in production, and I was in a rotational program, which allowed me to do a lot of different things. So I did everything from, you know, cut the top 10 plays that were on a sports show that night, to cutting a highlight of a game, to running the teleprompter for Scott Van Pelt while you know, did SportsCenter, you know, sitting behind the wall there, and like, or you see me in the back, and my friends would be watching SportsCenter. I'd be like, "Yo, watch my hands."
That's
you,
so cool.
See me waving to that.
Kendall, really, as you were coming up, when you came out of Penn and when you were getting started at BR, like, did you have an idea of what you like? Was your ultimate goal to end up a columnist or end up you know, on SportsCenter or being in production? Or did you kind of just figuring it out and knowing that sports media was where you wanted to be?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely. My first few months at ESPN and at Bleacher Report, I really didn't have a kind of big picture specific goal. I just knew that, you know, I wanted to be in sports in some capacity, but very much so looking back, and I had completely no idea what I was doing. but when I was at ESPN, I had a little bit of an epiphany. One was I started to realize that even amongst my coworkers at ESPN, you know, you think the biggest sports fan in the world, I was like, even they were like, dude, you're like really into sports. and so I think that was the first time, and I think this is something that people that, you know, are big sports fans and that maybe have aspirations to work in sports can relate to. There's something about sports where it's like, you know, you kind of assume that, well, everybody wants to work in sports or everybody is this into this stuff. You know, it's almost hard right out of college to like take sports as a career seriously without you even feeling a little bit like, am I just doing this because this is what I like and what I find interesting, and is this not serious enough? I think there's more to discuss there, but that's something I've always felt. But when I got to ESPN, that's the first time when I was like, okay, you know, maybe I am more interested than others.
Yeah.
At the same time, I had a few friends working, or I had one friend in particular working at The Skim, which is a newsletter, daily newsletter. And literally, like, as I was working at ESPN, I got this idea in my head of a daily sports newsletter. And I couldn't believe that nobody was doing it, and it was really weird to me. And that was kind of in my head. It wasn't like driving all of my decisions, but it was in my head. And after about a year at ESPN, I decided to take a job in San Francisco, to just kind of get out of the East Coast. I'm from New Jersey, went to school in Philadelphia, was working in Bristol, Connecticut. So I kind of wanted to just try something new, went out to San Francisco. But I also, you know, was really into this idea of specifically the newsletter, but more generally starting my own sports media company, whether that was, you know, I didn't know what media product I was going to go with first, but I really wanted to kind of do my own thing. I felt like I had something to say. I felt like I, you know, was really intrigued by kind of, you know, the rise of social media, the effects of that, how people were digesting information. And so I took a job out in San Francisco at a company called The Hustle, which was basically a blog at the time, covering tech and, you know, startups and nothing related to sports. And so I kind of jumped out of sports media, stayed in media, but took a job at a young company because I really wanted to learn how to grow an audience and how to launch products and how to monetize products.
Yeah.
And so I felt that, you know, a small company where I was going to wear a lot of hats, be able to do a lot, was the right place to be. Long story short, within about 2 weeks of being at The Hustle, I convinced the co-founders to pivot the business to a daily newsletter. And after about a month of testing that newsletter, the feedback was so good that we did pivot the whole business to that. And so for about a year and a half, I wrote a daily newsletter about tech, business, startups, you know, that type of news. And it, you know, it kind of took off, and The Hustle became one of the, you know, top probably five in terms of subscription numbers, daily newsletters. And
that's a really cool initiative, by the way, Kendall. It's really cool.
Yeah. It was very, very cool. And meanwhile, the whole time, you know, that was the first time not working in sports and not being a college kid or high school kid as a fan of sports, where I genuinely felt like my sports fandom was slipping. And that's when, you know, that whole idea of the sports daily newsletter, I've now developed all these skills to be able to do that. Look back at the landscape. Nobody's really doing this daily newsletter. Why isn't there a SportsCenter and an email, essentially? And so I basically left the Hustle to start that. And this was about 2 years ago, September 2017, and launched a daily newsletter called Sports Internet. And my vision was, you know, I'd kind of done it at the Hustle, so I was going out on my own, but I was also kind of replicating what I had learned, what I had been able to do. Mm-hmm. And so I had all these goals, you know, I'm going to hit these metrics, I'm going to do this, we're going to get to this many subscribers, then we're going to raise money, and we're going to hire, you know, two more people. And I had this whole roadmap. Mm-hmm. But within about 6 months of launching Sports Internet, I started to get some interest from other publications. And wow. That was also around the time, 6 months in, where I really started to, you know, be honest with myself. I'm like, what do I like more? Do I like the growth? Do I like growing the business? Do I like thinking about, do I like, you know, working with sponsors? And do I like thinking about, you know, hiring and all those things? And yes, that, a lot of that was interesting to me. What I found myself really just absolutely loving was the daily, kind of what I had been doing for so long with the Hustle, but now doing it with sports, which mm-hmm. is what I'm actually passionate about. I really was enjoying the newsletter kind of writing process. And as someone who likes to build things, I kind of find, and still do find, you know, 2 years later, the process of putting a newsletter together is kind of building in some ways for me. It's a lot of connecting the dots. It's a lot of, I basically have a blank page every day and I have to fill that and I have to make that, you know, or I have to organize that and I have to make it, you know, flow and all these things. And so I kind of, it's, you know, accomplish that part of me in this newsletter writing process. And so, again, within about 6 months, I started getting interest. And so that's when I realized, all right, maybe the end game here with Sports Internet is that it gets acquired. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, long story short, met Axios, actually tweeted at the managing editor that I had heard from a few readers saying that, you know, my newsletter was very similar to Axios. So I tweeted at the managing editor that night. A few people from Axios subscribed. A week later, I was on the phone with them. They were interested, and you know, six-ish months later, we made the deal.
And then
a year later, we're Axios Sports 1 year in.
It's a hell of a story. It's really cool, and again, just sitting here applauding constantly, hearing that and smiling because the initiative you took, the chance you took, and the planning you had, it's really awesome to hear that story. So when you start Sports Internet, how do you go about acquiring subscribers? I mean, you get your friends and family, and then what's the strategy? How did you make it happen and get on the radar of people, you know, knowing who you were, wanting to acquire you eventually?
Yeah, so for me, what I realized pretty early on, I think this is good advice for anybody, especially in this kind of landscape where there are a lot of tools that allow you to kind of be a one man, a one woman media company, if you will. And, you know, there's a chance that you get acquired. And so it really is, to me at least, the story that you're able to tell, right? So if I would have gone out and I would have, you know, spent the little money I had on user acquisition and had an open rate of about, let's say, 30% or something, and I really was just focused on that number of subscribers count, then when the negotiations came down with Axios or whoever, it would have been basically a math equation. Like, all right, you have this many subscribers. This is how much money they're worth.
Yeah.
Here's, you know. And for me, I thought a much better way of going about it was, what story can I tell? And the story I could tell is having a really engaged community, people who open this every day, people who need this. And so that's really what I focus on. I just focus on creating the best content that people would share with their friends. And so almost all of my growth was literally word of mouth. I built a referral program that kind of just, in many ways, made it easier for people to share with their friends, because mm-hmm. unfortunately, newsletters, unlike, let's say, Instagram or Twitter, where you just tag a friend, you know, they're not as intuitive. And so you do have to kind of, in many ways, build software that allows people to easily share with their friends, even when they want to. They sometimes don't know how. But really, you know, most of my growth was organic. I spent $0 on ads, none of that.
Wow.
The only thing I did that was, you know, in that realm of actually like performance based and campaign based was a few cross promotions with other newsletters, which actually were really effective. And the biggest takeaway for me there was realizing that, you know, newsletter reader is a demographic. People who read newsletters, that is a type of person. There's a type of consumer. Mm-hmm. And so you actually have, in my case at least, according to the results I saw, you have a much higher chance of getting somebody who is already a reader of a, let's say, business newsletter to subscribe to a sports newsletter, even if they're not the biggest sports fan in the world, than you are to get the biggest sports fan in the world who currently reads no newsletters to suddenly start reading newsletters. Because, you know, many people who read newsletters are have commutes. You know, that's not to say that all of them do, but that's a pretty big demographic there. People who have a commute every day, there's a 20-minute span in every weekday morning of theirs where they're idle and need something, and that's where you develop habitual, you know habits. And so that's a great example of a newsletter reader. But that's the one thing I did was the cross promotions, and that was my takeaway from that, is that if you're starting a newsletter and you want to grow it, find some other newsletters that have, you know, not necessarily the same, the readership doesn't necessarily need to be the same type of content, right? You don't need to be competitors, but maybe you have the same demographics, younger readers, older readers, male readers, female readers, whatever. But don't worry so much about what that newsletter covers. Maybe worry more about the demographic, and then you could see pretty good results.
Yeah, that's a ton of good insight in there. That's really interesting stuff to hear how, you know, what you learned and how you built it. And I there's a lot of directions I want to go into. You know, what drives the newsletter? I want to hear, like, both about the presentation, the content, who your audience was, what kind of takeaways you can get from glean from social media as to how content is being consumed there, if it's applicable. But let's start with a quick introduction, I guess, of the newsletter for people that are somehow not subscribed or listening to this. What it is, it's a breakdown of typically 10 topics that are listed, a list of 10. You know, some more in depth than others, looking at the top stories or conversations of the day, covers across a wide diversity of sports. So I guess tell me, you know, how you came up with the presentation, and then also a little bit of, you know, who this was for. Is it for the diehard fan? Is it for, you mentioned newsletter subscribers in general, and, you know, business people commuting. Are they looking for, you know, just enough so they can have a conversation in the break room, or are you trying to go in depth as well? So give me an idea of the presentation, and also what guides the content and substance, and how it maybe has evolved over the years. Just a little bit of a loaded question there for you.
I'd say in terms of the, you know, who it's for, we have a huge readership. It's only continues to grow, and I think, you know, we have a nice variety of sports fans, which is great. I think, you know, there's people who read my newsletter every day who work in sports, who are the biggest sports fans you ever meet. There are people who read my newsletter who are new to sports. And in fact, that is one of the largest demos that I did not anticipate when I started this, was the kind of people who don't know really anything about sports, but maybe are interested in learning more. Like, my newsletter is a really great thing for somebody, let's say, a 25-year-old guy who loves sports and his girlfriend who doesn't. Hey, like, sign up for this newsletter, and then all of a sudden we can talk about sports. Like, I've literally heard that story a million times from readers, like, literally telling me that, like, hey, my boyfriend told me to sign up for this, or like, my husband told me to sign up for this, and now we talk about sports, or like, I read this and now meet, and so that I can talk with, you know, about sports with my son on the ride to school every morning. You know, things like that, like, really cool stuff. That stuff literally, like, is, like, what I do this for. Like, it's, like, just helping people, like, connect is really cool to me. But in terms of, like, what the product is, in my mind is, you know, it's a balance between what happened last night, what happened yesterday, what's happening, kind of big picture, what's coming up. It's kind of hard to just, you know, kind of put it in a box. I guess one metaphor for people who, you know, if you had to describe it in like 2 seconds to somebody, it's kind of like, well, you know, it's kind of SportsCenter in an email in many ways. It's like, you know, your daily sports fix. I think in ways I differ from SportsCenter is I kind of try to combine, you know, sports news with, you know, some sports business news, some sports media news. I think we have the readership that I've built is, I think this word's kind of overused, but it's a smarter audience in terms of what they're looking for. It's a lot, you know, it's not, you know, they don't want box scores. You know, of course, I'm going to dig into the numbers when they're interesting and try and zoom out on that, but this is not a newsletter that's just like, here's what happened last night on the field. You know, we try and do a little bit more, extend beyond that, take advantage of some of the other areas of expertise at Axios. You know, we have media reporters who know a ton about the digital media landscape, which just happens, you know, sports happens to be on the forefront of that. Mm-hmm. You know, our business editors talking about the, you know, acquisitions happening in the, you know, gambling space. Like, we really try and take advantage of all the sports adjacent topics, if you will. But yeah, I mean, the one thing I always say to people is what I try and do when I sit down and read this, when I sit down and write this, is in my mind, I'm trying to give people their bearings. That's the general kind of thing I think about, is like, I personally find it very comforting when I can kind of wake up and read something that is not, that like has a start and a finish. Mm-hmm. It's not like my Twitter feed with just an endless scroll and I don't know if I'm missing something. I don't know if I've gotten to that big thing yet. Like, it's just very comforting to wake up, read something, finish it, and know, not like wonder, but like know that you're like caught up.
Yeah.
You're good. If something huge happened, like, trust me, it was in there. And if you know, like, there's no wondering if you missed something. There's no having to go out and search for something. And so that's kind of what I try and do for people. Like, here's the, you know, it's a combination of the most important things and also the most interesting things that maybe you wouldn't find out elsewhere. And that's really kind of my mission every day.
No, that's well put. And thanks for going deep into that. When you said, like, you're all caught up, it reminds me, I think it was Instagram back in the day that you could scroll down so far until you're all caught up and you have that crazy feeling of accomplishment almost. Oh,
yeah.
And obviously, you know, you mentioned your time at The Hustle really giving you some good insight and experience into developing those newsletters there. So, you know, what kind of guided this, the presentation of it, and how you decided to structure this newsletter, and, you know, has it changed over the years? And so what kind of influenced your architecture there?
So format was definitely influenced largely by Axios, actually. Axios, AM, Mike Allen's newsletter, you know, one items number 1 to 10. Actually, when I launched Sports Internet for the first about 2 months, I experimented with probably 8 different newsletter formats, you know, many inspired by other newsletters, and just trying to take that, what they built, and see if kind of I could make that work for sports. I think why the Axios-inspired format that I now use, you know, items 1 through 10, works so well is a few things. One is, obviously, when you're sharing it, it's really nice to be able to say, see item 6, see item 5. It's, you know, you don't have to describe to somebody what you're pointing out to them when you forward that email. It's just like, number 6, really funny, haha, whatever. I think that makes it really easy. I also think the number, you know, the 1 through 10 is nice, that particularly when you're reading on your phone, when you can only see so much at once, it's always nice to, again, going back to that word, have your bearings. Like, I'm halfway through. I'm 3/4 way through. I know where I am.
Yeah.
It's just, again, these are very micro things, but this is literally, like, what I think about is, you know, that reading experience. Like, I think about, like, every, you know, sentence. And because, like, I have basically 1,500 on average words every day to put together, like, everything has to be perfect in my mind. So the 1 through 10 items, I think, really does that in terms of, like, making you feel like you know where you are in the newsletter. And also, like, just generally speaking, I think the 1 through 10, you know, a few of those sections are recurring. So, like, 8 every day is the Ocho, and 7 every day is on this date and looking back in history. And so there's enough in there that is kind of, like, recurring, but the rest of it really is pretty flexible in terms of, like, I have a format I have to work with, but I can kind of make that work with whatever that day needs. And writing a newsletter is always a balance between creating enough sections that you're kind of filling with content, but not pigeonholing yourself too much that, you know, one day, you know, a bunch of news happens today and all of a sudden it's like, well, we have to have this and we have to have this. Like, right. You don't want to put yourself into a bind where you can't fit in what you want to fit in. So the 1 through 10 is flexible enough that I can kind of do whatever I want in that format.
And then when it comes to, I guess, learning about what your readers are responding to, what they want. So I guess an overall question about, you know, how you evaluate your success. I mean, obviously, you know, word of mouth, feedback, I'm sure you do some surveys every now and then, hearing people in word of mouth. But, like, you know, what kind of data are you looking at to judge success? And also, you know, how do you go about evaluating kind of the more qualitative stuff? Like, are people liking the content, and, you know, are they reading the whole thing? And how do you learn about and evaluate your success as you go on each day?
Yeah. So, I mean, newsletters obviously have minimal, I mean, there's plenty, but in terms of, like, let's say heat maps, for instance, you can't really see, you know, this person spent, or this person scrolled all the way down, this person didn't. You obviously see clicks, see the opens, number of opens, things like that. So I think clicks definitely are something I look at, you know, particularly when I, you know, it's something I'm kind of testing, maybe, or it's a survey or it's a new section. Like, I had a section for a few months that was literally, like, asking people to make their picks for that night's game.
Yeah.
So, obviously, if, you know, five people were clicking that, then we would have failed on it. But it was actually getting a ton of clicks. We're actually, we put press pause in that because there's a lot of work, but we're going to bring it back. So, like, things like that, clicks are very useful for. I think, on a whole, though, like, it really is not a great idea to get too bogged down in that from my position. I mean, our data team, I'm sure, is doing more of that. But, like, I really, you know, I've been doing this for so long that if I didn't trust myself to put the right stuff in there, then I would go crazy, you know, thinking, like, well, these people want this. And particularly with sports where everybody has their team, everybody, you know, everybody has the sports they like. I mean, if I listen to, you know, a guy last week who says, I don't want you to ever, like, I don't like basketball, stop covering so much NBA. And then the next week someone says, only cover NBA. You're like, what do I do with that? I mean, nothing. Right. I just have to kind of trust myself. And so really the only things I look at are, you know, on a macro level, obviously, you know, open rate. You know, if our open rate's going down, obviously people aren't liking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clicks, and specifically, like, if I'm testing a section, how many clicks I get, how much engagement that gets. And then I do, as you mentioned, yeah, well, you know, whether it's a company-wide survey or just a kind of specific question I ask, or, you know, just ask for general feedback. I get a lot of that, and that's always good. Again, you can't really think about individual responses too much, but, you know, over a year now, I've gotten enough of the same responses that I know certain things are good, certain things aren't as good, and so you just kind of learn.
Yeah, definitely an art and science combination there. Even with clicks, like, as you mentioned, when you're trying to get a click or asking for a call to action, it's definitely different. But, you know, oftentimes you'll link to a full story, but, you know, oftentimes I'll see, okay, well, I think Kendall gave me the gist here, so I don't need to click to read more, but I can if I want to and get more in depth.
Exactly. I mean, that's a great point. Like, you know, what is that? What does a click actually mean? I mean, you could argue that, because in many ways, my job with a lot of the stories is make you not feel like you need to click.
Save you a click.
Yeah, I mean, like honestly, if I'm doing my job, you know, we don't want you to leave. But at the same time, there are situations where I actually do, and genuinely do. And I think that's another thing that makes actual sports stand out in the sports media landscape is that, you know, I am not really competing with anybody. And so that's kind of allowed me to build some pretty good relationships with other media companies, other writers, because I genuinely, like, and again, it's kind of coming down to myself and trusting myself, but if I think something is, like, one of the best things I've read in 3 months, then I genuinely want all of my subscribers to read that.
Yeah.
And whether that's on ESPN.com, SportsIllustrated.com, The Ringer, it doesn't matter. I just want to give, like, I want that to be our mission. Like, if there is something you need to see, like, you need to see it, and, you know, I think that goes against what a lot of media companies do, which is, particularly with newsletters, is the whole goal there is to get you to click to their site. And so the incentives are completely misaligned, whereas mine is literally, I'm just trying to get you the best stuff, and I'm trying to, like, make your morning better. And if that's me writing about what happened last night, or you clicking the story about, you know, that this person wrote that took them three weeks, and it's awesome, like, you should go read that.
Yeah, it's a really good point and interesting way to think about it, for sure. I want a few more minutes left here with Kendall Baker, sports editor for Axios Sports, or Axios. And want to revisit something you were talking about earlier a little bit, and that is how, you know, you are really going beyond just the static, you know, one-way newsletter. There is a community there. There is engagement happening, people replying to you, you know, doing picks, doing little contests here and there. So tell me about, like, it seems like a next level of newsletters to have that engagement, have that community. So what's the idea there? And then tell me about some of the plans and also things that, you've done in the past successfully and what the plans are for the future.
Yeah, so, I mean, the big plan in the future is something we're going to, as a company, be making some pretty substantial changes, updates, if you will, in the next few months. So that's going to completely change everything. But in the meantime, you know, yeah, it's interesting with newsletters, right? Like, unless you build the community elsewhere, you have a community that the people in the community don't know about. Like, you know, it's a more accurate description almost would be like, I just have a bunch of one-on-one relationships with people who feel like I'm their friend, but they don't know that, like, in many cases, they don't know, like, that my other friend, who also reads the thing that they read every morning, like, like Mark Cuban reads on a daily day basis. I don't think many people know that, but that's kind of cool for them to know that, like, somebody like that is reading what they read. And that's the next level, like you said. And so we've built a community of people, very small scale. We're still figuring it out. You know, we're making some hats. Like, we're really kind of that's a new thing that we're doing with my newsletter that we're hopefully going to roll out to other newsletters. But that's very much still kind of in the works. But yeah, like, taking it to the next step and taking it beyond the newsletter, which is very much a, you know, me talking, you listening, but you can always reply and then I'll reply back to you. But the next level is, well, you know, what if you could reply and everybody sees it and then they start talking, you know? So there's a lot of interesting things you can do. It's obviously not as easy as just throwing a comment section in there because A, you can't, you know, interact with emails. You'd have to click off. B, then you need someone to moderate that. So every interesting idea comes with, you know, more work. And so it's a balance between, you know, what can we add to this without getting away from what's working, which is the newsletter itself. And that's probably the biggest lesson I learned at The Hustle at a company like that is the importance of focus and the importance of not trying to do too much and the importance of recognizing what you do well and just doing that. And I think what I do well is newsletter. And, you know, I don't think we've proven yet that we do the community part well, but I think we will in the future.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting way to look at too. With right now the really fast growth of podcasts, and you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts myself. No surprise, I produce podcasts also. And you know, you see some of them trying to activate all their listeners. That right now is a very one way, and you know, sometimes one to one if someone is, you know, tweeting at them or emailing them via the podcast. Of you're seeing them, you know, develop a Reddit community, develop a private Facebook group, develop a Slack channel. Tell them to go to your website and you know, get log in and use a message board. So it's interesting to look at in that from that lens as well. And you know, is there a benefit to having your readers, your subscribers go to an O&O platform, own and operate platform, or versus, you know, setting up a private Facebook group, setting up a Slack channel, having them use a hashtag on Twitter? Like, what's the mindset when it comes to creating community, or are you guys still sort of figuring it out?
Yeah, I think we are still figuring it out, and to your point, there are a lot of different ways to go about it. We do have, like I mentioned, something coming up in the next few months that will kind of change all of this, and I'm pretty excited about that. But yeah, I think for me, it's you know, thinking about what we do with that is the most important thing to me. Like, not just that we build it or where we build it, but what we do with it, because, again, you know, sports in particular, and particularly with what I do, which is cover every sport, you know, that there almost has to be, I wouldn't say somebody full-time, but somebody needs to spend some significant time, you know, basically managing that group, basically making sure it's worth everyone's time. And I don't have that time right now. And so there's just a lot of decisions that we'll have to make if we really want to, you know, hone in on that. But I'm confident that we'll do something cool.
That's a really good point. All right, Ken, I want you to divulge as much of your secrets as you can. So tell me, I know you're, besides being just a diehard sports fan, which I am myself as well, and you know, probably consuming a lot of sports content. What is your process for developing the content in the newsletters on a daily, nightly basis? Are you just, I can't imagine you sleep too much sometimes. Especially, I know you're heading back to the East Coast soon, and that'll be some late nights. So, what's your process for figuring out what I should be covering and then how to go about, you know, distilling stuff into the main gist that people need to know?
Well, I mean, it's just a lot of reading. It's a lot of listening to podcasts. A lot of, you know, just, I mean, I have, you know, SportsCenter or something else on all day in the background. But, I mean, and so I guess the tool I rely on probably the most is my RSS feed, mm-hmm. which is essentially every website in one place. Every article that's published on those websites in one place, so that kind of gives me a feeling of comfort in that I'm not going to miss anything. And you know, as I kind of run through all that, I'm connecting dots. I'm saying, oh, this story is actually related to this story, so maybe we combine those into the. Oh, wait, okay, actually, this makes for a one big thing type piece. We can zoom out. This is kind of a big picture. So, like, yeah. You know, it's all about, you know, consuming information in a way that allows you to organize that information, whether it's saving it for a future date, putting it together in that day's newsletter. So I have a very, I mean, it's almost indescribable on the phone. I have a pretty complex system of tools that I've accumulated over the years that allows me to do what I do, because what I do is kind of crazy. It really is. You know, read the internet every day, and then take all of that and organize it in a way that makes sense and is compelling and it's funny. And then on top of that, you know, create a bunch of original content, interview people, get it. You know, that's slowly becoming a bigger part of my job.
I'm excited
about that. You know, hopefully in 2020 we're going to be breaking news and doing all that type of stuff. Totally different skill set, by the way, than. You know, curation, which I think is something that people don't talk about enough. A lot of new media is curation based, and you know, the ability to read the news and then give your take on that news or organize that news, totally different skill set than, you know, work a source for 3 weeks or interview an athlete. And so I'm enjoying the process of getting better at those latter things.
Really cool. And how much do you look at, you know, I guess Twitter, because that's really where a lot of the social media conversation takes place in real time around sports.
Yeah.
Do you use that as a little bit of a gauge and knowing that, okay, this is the vocal minority, but it's a good gauge for what people are talking about overall? Or do you use a little bit of massaging too to know that, you know, this is an audience, but it's not my entire audience?
Well, I think, so for me, Twitter, I use a lot to, like, I'll find the story elsewhere. Like, I don't use Twitter in the same way that I think a lot of other journalists do, in terms of, like, that's, like, their primary place. That's, like, where they make sure they're not missing anything. Like, I don't do that because I feel like I go crazy. And, you know, I usually use Twitter for, like, I have a story, I've written it, and then I kind of maybe search that topic on Twitter and see what people are saying about it. And that's when you get some interesting, you know, maybe quotes or sparks an idea, but that's usually kind of how I use Twitter. And I think to your point of like using it as a gauge in terms of like what's important, that goes back to and I think this is it crucial for anybody who's doing what I'm doing. Like I just really trust my gut.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about that is sometimes what I have as my top story or what I have in there is not what people are quote unquote think is important on Twitter. I actually think that helps Axios Sports stand out sometimes because I don't, as much as I want to be, and as much as I use the metaphor of like SportsCenter and an email, I also in many ways want to separate myself from that. And so a good example would be like, you know, like some like, you know, like, NBA, you know, reality TV, like kind of silly. Okay, like the Joel Embiid, Carl Anthony Towns fight or something. Mm. Like, obviously, everybody's talking about that. Is anybody to care about that 2 days from now? No, that's obviously going to like lead SportsCenter, and that's gonna, you know, it's going to be this whole thing.
Yeah.
And then Axios Sports, that's probably like the third item, and maybe it's just the photo of it. But our top item is about like youth sports or something that, you know, it's not going to be talked about on SportsCenter last night, but is actually maybe, you know, in my opinion, way more important. And so it's a balance between covering the what everybody would agree with as a big picture item, but then also maybe ignoring some every now and then and going a different direction.
Yeah, I love this deep dive stuff. It's so good. One more question for you, Kendall, before we get to this episode's shareable stat, and that is about you. You know, I think, you know, maybe this is part of Axios as well, but it's, you know, very clear that it's, I feel like I know you, it's your voice, it's your signature at the end of the email, it's presented as if you're talking to me. So, you know, tell me about, you know, how much is the newsletter reliant on, you know, it being Kendall Baker, or is the ultimate goal just to keep this a quality product that you know, that it could be someone else doing it in the future without it being Kendall Baker in your voice?
Yeah, no, I think the goal for sure is to hire somebody who can help on a daily basis, and then when I do go on vacation, can fill in. And that's what we have with a lot of our other newsletters right now. That works really well. And so we are going to be hiring somebody in the, you know, in the next few months, with that goal in mind. So yeah, I think, you know, it's always going to come from my name, or at least as long as I'm at Axios, and that's how, all of our newsletters work. And I think it's kind of genius, in that it does create more of a relationship, with the readers, and that's what we want.
Yeah, that's exactly what I had in mind, is that, you know, knowing there's a person behind it, and some publications might just want it to come from, you know, this is Axios Sports newsletter, but it comes from Kendall Baker, and that makes you relate that much more, and leads you to, you know, click reply and just have that one-on-one conversation. Now I know you're talking to not just me on those other conversations. You have other subscribers.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, there's some risk in that, I think. You know, like, I think a lot of media companies don't want to lean too heavily on one person, on one expert. But that's what I... You know, Axios has kind of taken that leap, and I think we are getting rewarded for that, because if you look at the current media landscape, you know, if I'm an expert on a certain field, like, you know, I could go start a Substack newsletter or whatever, and I could start, you know, charging $5 a month. And so I think what Axios is able to do is offer that kind of autonomy to people, but also bring them under their umbrella and be part of this, you know, this company that's really going places and has an HBO show. And you know, it's a nice balance between, you know, in many ways, like, my day is very similar to my day when I was on my own, but I just have a ton more resources now and, you know, a huge readership. And I think that's a credit to Axios, is that somebody could be writing a newsletter independently and then come on board and basically feel like they're doing the same thing. Like, that's pretty awesome.
I mean, super cool and really, really awesome to hear kind of the inside baseball of what goes into the newsletter and all the work you put in to make it happen, and your story to start in the first place. And now we're doing great things with Axios, and it sounds like there's a lot more to come on the horizon. But we'll have some more questions for you in our Questions for Kendall segment. Not my most clever name, but it'll do for our quick hitting segment. First episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that. Man, what a great chat with Kendall Baker of Axios Sports. Really enjoyed getting to hear his story and learning from him. Stick around, because in our quick-hitting question segment, we hear a lot more from Kendall, including a day in the life of creating that fantastic newsletter, and that's an interesting thing to hear. So stick around for that, but first, this episode's shareable stat. This episode's shareable stat comes from a recent DigiDay article, and it has to do with Snapchat. A pretty astounding stat, a pretty eye-opening stat, is that on average, more than 70% of Snapchat's 200+ million daily active users, 210 million daily active users, over 70% play or view lenses every single day. Also, they interact with the AR on the platform over 30 times per day. So a lot of playing around with lenses and with AR on the platform in a high volume every single day. Pretty astounding. I think a lot of social media teams maybe have written off Snapchat as just sort of something that they can discard in favor of spending more time on getting good at Instagram stories, TikTok now, and Twitter, of course. And yet Snapchat still persists. It still commands a lot of attention from users, from younger users, from younger fans. Perhaps not so much on consuming branded content, while there are many exceptions. You know, ESPN SportsCenter still does very well according to the metrics, but they do indeed, according to this shareable stat, play with lenses and interact with lenses and AR. and that's a great way to penetrate this platform, to get involved in dark social, even if their users are using lenses, so they can share it to their Instagram story. It's a way to insert your brand into a behavior that clearly a lot of users, a lot of fans are utilizing every single day. So think about it, ponder it, maybe try some lenses. It's still, Snapchat is not something to be forgotten as long as they're commanding over 200 million daily active users, many of whom are, you know, interacting with AR at quite a high volume. All right, that's the social shareable stat. Again, over 70% of Snapchat's 210 million daily active users play or with or view lenses every single day and interact with AR on the platform approximately 30 times per day. Stick around. We're going to finish up with our quick-hitting questions with Kendall Baker of Axios. Back in this episode of Shareable Stat, and I'm joined once again by Kendall Baker. He is sports editor for Axios. He is not currently working on the newsletter because he's talking to me, and we're lucky to have him. We had a great time in our interview with you, Kendall. Are you now ready for some more questions with Kendall?
Do it.
All right. Number one, this is always a fun one. Just give me a day in the life of you putting together a newsletter. What's it like on an average day working with Axios? And, you know, when are you finally pushing send or pushing save on that last draft?
So I'm on the West Coast, so I stay up late. That's my secret. So I also wake up late. So I wake up around 10:30, 11. Mm-hmm. So pretty, you know, significantly late. And then, you know, with East Coast coworkers, like, a lot has happened when I wake up. So I'm kind of immediately into, like, answering emails, just kind of diving right in. And so I usually spend the first, you know, hour or so, you know, front emails, getting kind of my life together. And then I'm immediately into sports news. I'll turn on SportsCenter, which I record every morning, mm-hmm. get caught up in that, have that on the background while I'm reading through my RSS feed, see what's happening, got some newsletters in the morning. So within the first 3 hours of waking up, I'm like, good. I feel like I have a good sense of what's happened. Yeah, this is probably 2 p.m. West Coast, so 5 p.m. Eastern. So mm-hmm. that's about the time people, you know, think, you know, for somebody on the East Coast, that kind of gives you a sense of, like, what I've read within a few hours of waking up. It's like, you know, late afternoon, get it going to the night. Most day news has happened. That's when I'll request some illustrations from my coworkers if I need, you know, a story that needs an illustration, or, you know, a chart or a graph, mm-hmm. Any of those types of things. And then I'll, around 4 p.m., go to the gym, work out, kind of get away from everything, clear my head, mm-hmm. Get some food, all that. And then I'll come home, you know, maybe listen. It depends on the day. Sometimes I'll, you know, watch a game, right, if it's on. Again, West Coast, beautiful thing, 5 p.m.
Hell yeah.
4:30, you know, those times, like, with some baseball games could be even earlier next year. So, like, you know, 6 o'clock, 6:30 starts. I see, so like 3:30, I guess, would be great. But, yeah, I'll watch a game or whatever. Spend some time with my girlfriend, and then my main kind of writing time is basically from 9 p.m. to whenever, and ideally that is like 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. in that Jeez. Zone. That's when I feel like I kind of nailed it, and I will then, you know, so that like 5 hour, 6 hour stretch is when I really crank everything out. Up to that point, maybe I'll have a few things already written. I'll have this illustration. So that's kind of when I get the bulk of everything done. And then I'll pass it off to a copy editor who checks for, you know, typos, things like that. And I will go to bed.
Geez, so you're the one who knows what Twitter looks like at 2:30 in the morning, I guess. Right?
Yeah. And it's crazy hours, no doubt. But I've been doing it for so long, I've kind of gotten used to it, and I actually have come to really enjoy that night time writing schedule, because the world is sleeping. There's no news that's going to break.
Yeah.
So it's really nice for what I do to be able to have this. You know, I'm kind of looking at the day as a whole, and I'm able to, you know, see everything that happened and know that that's not going to change.
No, it makes sense. Yeah, even Woj is asleep at those hours. We think.
Yeah, it was great. It was really great during the whole NBA China fiasco, because that stuff was breaking at those hours, and so I felt like I was really out in front of that, and that worked to my benefit. But yeah, I mean, that rarely happens, which is great for me. I mean, it's really nice to know that what I'm writing is not going to change.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that I experienced at The Hustle quite a bit, where I'd write a story, you know, at like noon, and then, you know, 4 hours later, that's not really a top story anymore. It's like, it's literally wasting time. So that's what I never do, which is great.
Are you like a really fast reader when you're trying to get through articles? Are you taking notes sometimes when you're reading articles? How do you get through so much content?
I think I'm a fast reader, fast skimmer, because I think it's going back to just repetition and having done this for so long, but I'm pretty good at, you know, something happens, collecting a few sources on that, reading those, and then just kind of being able to combine all that in my head and organize that in my head. So I can turn a story around from finding out about something to, you know, a tight 250 word story that's ready to publish in probably 30 minutes.
That's awesome, and that's a skill you bring to the table, of course. Number two, I'm excited about this one. So you talked about you know, the Ocho every day in the newsletter, something I've come to look forward to and have discovered a lot of interesting sports. So tell me the most unusual sport you've covered in one of your newsletters.
Ooh, most unusual. I guess I'd say maybe, probably the like World Slapping Championships.
Oh yeah.
there's a few sports that fall into that department of just like really kind of isn't a sport, but the fact that there's like an actual tournament for it that kind of reminded me of like, you know, arm wrestling tournaments or whatever, rock, paper, scissors tournaments. I think that was on ESPN a few years ago. But I thought that was pretty crazy.
Oh, just so good. I think you need to start like an Instagram feed or a Twitter feed that just is posting the Ocho from every day. I think that would
care. I honestly, you know, we might do something like that next year. I'm just worried I'm going to run out of content for it, but but for whatever reason, it always delivers. You know, you think like it's like a Tuesday and you're thinking you're not going to get anything, and then all of a sudden you stumble upon the best thing ever.
Oh, it's so great. Number three for you, Kendall. Tell me your favorite story that you or piece of content that you worked on at Bleacher Report.
I did a lot of Orioles content because I was a big Orioles fan. I can't remember any particular article. Maybe I'll go with this was, I think, 2013, and I had to make a projection of like the 2018, 2019 NBA All-Stars. And I think the reason why it's my favorite is when I look back at it, and I think it was just so wrong. that just kind of like cracks me up, and kind of how I feel about all those types of articles in general. It's just like such a waste of time. Like, who knows? I think I had like Michael Carter Williams as like a, you know, NBA All-Star starter because of course, like this was right after he like set the record for, you know, most triple doubles in a row or whatever. So that's probably my favorite just because it's so bad.
Yeah, well, I know you make some predictions in your newsletter sometimes too. So we'll have to start to keep track of those and see how your batting average is.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I want to know about that.
All right. People that know me know I went to Yale for undergrad, and you went to Penn, as you mentioned. So tell me, if it's even possible, tell me why is Penn the best Ivy League school?
Oh, easy. Philly.
Oh, gosh.
Penn is a fantastic combination of city school, but also has a campus that you never feel a need to leave. So, you know, obviously, like, Columbia is also a city school, plenty of other city schools, but I feel like Penn is kind of the best of both worlds.
Okay, that's a pretty valid answer. I'll give you that. I still think Yale is better because we're centrally situated, where I can get to New York and get to Philly and get to Boston. But Penn is, you know, Philly's a fun town. I have been there, so I'll give you that.
Central location is nice. I spent, as I said, working at ESPN. I was in Bristol.
That's right.
Connecticut for a year, so I spent plenty of time in the area, take the train to New Haven, you go out West Hartford, all that stuff.
All right, this one is another one I'm looking forward to. Tell me the non-Axios newsletter of sports or not that is, you know, one that you really like or is done really well.
I think all of ours are fantastic. I guess the one I would recommend, just because it's a different frequency than mine, which is nice to mix up, is our Media Trends newsletter, which is once a week. And mm-hmm. for me, you know, as somebody who loves me, you know, loves all things media, whether it's sports or not, it's a great read. And again, going back, just kind of the weekly cadence is a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so it's less like news and more just, you know, big picture stuff, a lot of really interesting data. So that would be my recommendation. And Sarah who writes that, is great. We actually figured out that we grew up in the same town, so that's
cool.
She gets bonus points from me.
You mentioned The Skim earlier, too, as like one that you learned from. The Hustle, obviously, being another. Is there a non-Axios one that you think you learned from or think does a good job?
I think Morning Brew is pretty good.
Okay.
They're like business news. Getting to a little bit more than that, too. I think they just launched like a more politics-centric one. But I know the guys who started that, really good guys, and they seem to be doing well, so yeah, I would recommend that for sure.
Definitely want to check out. All right, next question for you, Kendall. We went into a lot of the things that you've learned about putting together your content and putting together your newsletter. So tell me the number one lesson you've learned. You know, you have, you know, a good job with headers and bullet points, and just it's really easily digestible. So the number one lesson you learned about how fans can how you fans or even readers in general want to digest their content in 2019.
How they want to digest it.
Yeah, how do you use that format is so friendly in your newsletter, and I don't, and you know, it's done intentionally and it's really digestible. So, you know, yeah. what kind of takeaways do you have from that, or number one lesson you learned from that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's the ideal thing you can do for someone is give them all of the, well, at least the ideal thing you can do for somebody in the format that I'm presenting them is give them all the information that is vital to that story, and then give them the opportunity to go deeper on that if they'd like. I think that's, I mean, what more can you really ask for than that? And I think one thing to always keep in mind is, you know, with such a high percentage of people reading on their phone, you know, you don't want to have, ideally, you don't have very large paragraphs. Like,
yeah.
If you can, if somebody visually, if you think about a phone screen, can see kind of the top of what they're reading and kind of what's coming at all times, that keeps them going down the page. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but I find even myself a lot of the times, I think we're all just developing more ADD from just being on our phones and scrolling through Twitter and social media so much. But like, I mean, if I'm reading an article and all of a sudden there's just a giant block of text, sometimes that is just immediate, I'm done.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate, but I think that's reality. And instead of kind of fighting against that reality, I kind of feel like I just kind of embraced it and tried to make reading feel like the opposite of a chore.
No, it's very, very true. You don't have these giant blocks of text that get intimidating. And I think the, you know, the numbers that you talked about earlier, numbering things, is definitely amenable as well. It's like having short chapters in a book. You feel like you accomplish something as you get through each part of it. And
yeah.
That completion is just there's something to that, either psychologically or even hormonally.
Yeah, and it's also nice that, you know, they're short enough that if somebody doesn't like that sport, which is going to happen when you're covering every sport, they can just scroll right past it.
Yeah.
It's not like a thing. And so it's kind of giving readers the power to read what they want, skip what they want, go deeper on what they want. If they read a top story and really interested in that, they could just spend their whole morning reading about that. If they think the top story's stupid, they just scroll past that, and then they find their favorite thing, like at number four.
Totally. And I think your point about being, you know, mindful of the mobile engagement too is super important these days with so many people opening on mobile.
Yeah.
Next one for you. We went into this a little bit earlier. I kind of want to hear what it was like when you first started it. Talk about how you engaged with your audience with the Pick'em challenges, and you know, was it just you using a spreadsheet or a Google Sheet on the other end, just doing the legwork?
Pretty much, yeah. I've done a lot of things that are just not scalable at all, and just like way too much work, but was cool enough that I felt was worth it. So yeah, a lot of spreadsheet work. The nice thing that we did when we were doing the Pick'em with Axios was we just, you know, used SurveyMonkey, which kind of did that for me.
Yeah.
In some respects, but Yeah, a lot of that stuff, particularly when you're working with email, which is limiting, right? You can't embed things. You have to kind of do everything off email. It's a lot of workarounds, a lot of hacks, but it's, you know, in my opinion, when it's worth it, it's kind of fun to do. And
totally.
One thing I've learned about readers is, you know, even if things, you kind of test things and then they don't end up continuing, you don't want to make a habit of that, but people actually kind of appreciate experiments and tests and make anything that makes something feel like it's less of a, you know, product coming out from a company and more of a human being kind of just sending you an email and seeing if this is fun or not. You know, people like that. So
yeah.
There's kind of no downside.
Yeah, like that. It had to be really cool for you too, like the first time you asked people to respond to you in some way. When you had the people respond, you're like, oh, wow, these people want to engage with me. It's got to be a cool feeling when you realize there's a community behind all that.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the replies they get from people and just like the positive feedback I get it's really awesome.
That's great. All right, next one for you. It's the food question. I'm coming up toward the end here with Kendall Baker of Axios, sports area for Axios. And you've been up there in San Francisco for a few years now, at least a couple of years. And so tell me, what's the best food to get up there and where do I go get it?
Oh man, that's tough. I mean, everybody's gonna say burritos, so I feel like I have to do something else. I'll go with burrito. El Farlito. El Farlito, probably the best burrito I've ever had. There's a few different, it's one of the taquerias in the Mission neighborhood. There's a few of them that are kind of very similar and serve very similar things, but that's my personal favorite, so there you go. I'll be that guy and give you a burrito place like everybody.
Hey, as long as we can go up there and be happy after the meal, then you're in a good spot.
Perfect.
All right, this is going to be a really hard one. You read a lot of content every day. You know, everything from ESPN, the Bleacher Report, to The Ringer, the New York Times. I mean, you read so many different publications. So tell me, if you had to pick one, what's your favorite sports publication? You know, obviously not non-Axios related.
I'll go with The Ringer right now. I think they do a great job. And I mean, it's obviously, you know, comparing apples to oranges, comparing them to, let's say, ESPN,
yeah,
which is just doing a lot more. But The Ringer to me represents kind of a corner of the internet that you always need, which is just to me kind of just really passionate, maybe even nerd level, you know, sports fans who are just really into sports and you know, have interesting takes and aren't too buried in the day-to-day news. And kind of similar to what I do is I always find it more interesting to read about, you know, the bigger picture things, the trends that are impacting the entire season, not the, you know, trade that happened 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I value The Ringer so much, is that most of what they publish is you know, bigger picture stuff and not so much in the weeds that, you know, media companies who are covering sports on a day-to-day basis kind of have to do.
No, it's definitely good. And the Ringer as a brand, I always tell people this, is such a fascinating brand to me that they can have stories about, you know, about hip hop, about NBA, and then about, you know, movies,
right.
and yet it's always all so good, and it somehow, you know, they built this fan base around all these different areas, different themes.
Yep. Yeah, they're doing a really good job.
All right, last one for you, Kendall. You know, we got one more a little over a month here left in 2019, so you can pick this either for the full year or for what's left of the year. What's going to be the biggest sports story, either for the rest of the 2019 or when we look back on the year past?
Honestly, this science dealing thing is feeling like that might be it. It's gaining, just in the last 4 days, it's gaining some serious momentum, and I know that it's obviously not baseball season, and there's a lot going on, and the way the news cycle works now, it's like, you know, that was the biggest story, and then the next day, Myles Garrett, you know, hits Mason Rudolph's helmet,
yeah,
and all of a sudden, nobody's talking about the Astros anymore. But I think when we look back on this, and I think it largely will depend on what the punishment comes down from MLB and what kind of comes of this, but if you just kind of think about that, and just how it's kind of controversial, and that it's not cheating. Well, it's cheating if they use technology, but even science dealing as a whole, the fact that that's kind of part of baseball, I think it's always kind of gone over people's heads, and they never actually thought about that. And it's just a lot of stuff happening for a sport that's already kind of dealing with a lot. this feels like a pretty big moment for kind of the sport of baseball.
No, it's so fascinating. I mean, baseball wants to be a sport people talk about year-round like they do with the NFL and NBA, and here's their kind of opportunity, but not the way they would have wanted it.
Right, exactly.
All right, Kendall, had a great time doing some more questions with Kendall. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow, whether they're on Twitter or another platform, who they are and why they're following.
I'd probably say Super 70 Sports on Twitter.
Yeah.
A lot of throwback 70s stuff, and always get a kick out of it.
That's always a welcome sight in the feed, is some cool, super cool stuff from them. All right, and how about you? Where can we find you, as well as where do you want to direct us to find Axios and Axios Sports on digital and social media?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at the Kendall Baker, and best way to sign up for the newsletter is just sports.axios.com.
Beautiful. And if you're not subscribing, you're listening to this podcast, you're not doing it right, so make sure you do, because it's a welcome sight in my inbox every day. I look forward to it. And Kendall, you do a great job. And I really enjoyed being able to pick your brain today and learn from you, and really impressed by everything you built and continue to do. And appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much, man. I'm happy to have come on. And if you want me on again, happy to do it.
Hey, best of luck moving forward. And we will reunite either on the East Coast or maybe have a burrito down here in LA sometime.
All right, sounds good.
Thank you so much again to Kendall Baker. Editor for Axios Sports. Just a great opportunity to pick his brain, learn from him, be inspired by his story. Really enjoyed hearing all the nooks and crannies of what goes into what he does every single day and what may come of it as he continues to grow the newsletter and grow the community within it. I know I look forward to it every single day, and it's pretty cool and pretty astounding to see how it's grown from sports internet to now with Axios and six figures of subscribers to the newsletter. So subscribe to today if you're not already subscribing, and you'll learn from what Kendall does every day and see some great content too. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Again, I thank you for downloading and listening. Check out the website, dsmsports.net, for more content and episodes. Find the podcast on all your favorite podcast platforms, so subscribe if you'd like. And follow me, your host, Neil Horwitz, on Twitter at NJH287. And find me on LinkedIn and my content there as well. Until next time, this is Neil signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.